listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special singer-songwriter all the way from New York, Kaylin. How are you, Kaylin?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And we're going to feature two of your projects, but let's first talk about how you first got into music. You play piano. When did you start playing piano?
Oh, I started, I'm not sure, when I was around maybe 7 or 8.
Start with classical? Is that like the typical? Because I started with classical. I remember that.
Yes, but well, I had a teacher who was really kind of allowed me to do my thing. So we did a little bit of jazz. We did a little bit of theory, a little bit of everything. Like he helped me produce my first song at 11.
Wow. That's amazing.
An instrumental song. Yeah, called The Storm in D minor. Saddest of all keys. Yeah, he was just a really creative guy, and he was really good at leaning into a student's strength, just wherever their passion was, like, let's go there, let's spend time there. And so I think I really credit him for, you know, my part of my passion for music.
That's awesome. And are you originally from New York?
No, from New Hampshire, from the woods.
Oh, that's awesome. What city in New Hampshire? Manchester?
No, no city, just from from the town of East Kingston near Exeter, New Hampshire. That's sort awesome. Of seacoast area.
Okay. And when did you move out of there to New York?
Well, I went away for college. I went to Philly for university. And then after that, I came to New York.
Where did you go to school in Philly?
University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, nice. And where's your Philly cheesesteak spot in Philly? What's your spot?
Man.
This is a hard question.
I know. I can't say that I really, really had one.
Okay. All right. All the people from Philly that I know, everybody raved about Jim's. So that has become my Philly cheesesteak spot in Philadelphia. So
I mean, cheesesteak is just good. Yes. I think it doesn't matter where you get it from. It's just... It's like meat and hot cheese, you know.
Did you play on, what is it? Is it South Street? Yeah, South. Did you ever play on South Street when you were going to school there?
So not really. Well, when I was going to school there, I started playing with like a frat band. So we played frat parties, and that was a scene. And then it wasn't until later on, like touring from New York, where I ended up going through Philly a bunch and playing South Street, playing various places.
And when you came back to New York, were you like, okay, I want to be here because this is the music scene? It's really LA and New York in a lot of ways, but the songwriter scene in New York, I've played there a couple times, but I've never just lived there and seen what that is like. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like for you, especially coming from New Hampshire and then going to Philly and getting the taste of the big city and then coming back to New York?
So I started writing like my own songs, like aside from The Storm in D minor, which was when I was younger. It really wasn't until college that I started basically taking like jazzy hip hop beats, like instrumental Gangstar, and then just kind of riffing over it for top lines. And then I realized like I play the piano. So wait, why don't I try writing my own things? My songs were like, you would have a hard time finding the tempo, finding the key. They were like rambling 9 minute, you know, ideas. It wasn't really until like towards the end of college that I started making them more into songs. And yes, at that point, I mean, I had always been attracted to New York, but I felt kind of afraid to go to university in New York. I felt afraid to go to college. I just didn't feel ready yet to tackle bad city. And then upon moving here, I really had the image in my mind of like a New York from the late 60s, early 70s.
Right. Right. And that's like the picture of like, you have the Hendrix talking to, you know, I'm wearing a Jimi Hendrix shirt, actually. You know,
nice. My daughter's name is Hendrix.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool. And, you know, like Hendrix would, you know, be building Electric Ladyland and hanging out with Patti Smith. And like,
100%.
It's like that era of New York is one of the most famous. Bowie, everybody was just there. You know what I mean? So yeah. I know why you're drawn to it. I'm still drawn to it for that reason, just because there's so many artists, there's so much happening, there's so much hustle and bustle. And, you know, it's just like got a scene. And then kind of like, when did it kind of dawn on you, okay, I want to collaborate with other musicians. I want to play in a band as well. Like, when did that kind of become an attractive thing for you?
So, you know, right away, I started playing out in the like open mic scene, which is definitely a scene.
Right.
And such a wonderful thing, because you have people from a lot of different levels doing it. You know, I didn't really even know how to use a mic correctly at the time that I started doing that. And at first I was like, oh, the scene is nothing like what I imagined. But
why is that?
I just think it takes a little while to get to find where the scene is. You know, there's always a scene at any point in time. It just might not look like what your vision in your head is, but so I sort of responded to things, and I became a background singer, backup singer, and then like the lead singer to a band where I was just kind of a hired gun. And it was through that that I met some really talented musicians, you know, Berkeley grads, people whose theory were light years beyond mine. And then I started collaborating with them sort of on the side with some other projects. And that became like the thing that I was obsessed with doing. Cause I came from the visual arts world, actually, even more than music.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
And yeah, that was I was a photography major in school. Even though it was actually the head of the art department who was really encouraging my music. Maybe she didn't think I was a very good visual artist.
No, I mean, sometimes what you study in school is not what you end up doing.
No, totally, totally.
That's how you find yourself, because exactly. I studied opera in school, and I'm so happy I'm not doing any of that, because I was way into it, and then I was like, you know, this is not as fun as just playing rock and roll and blues and funk and all the, you know, all the things that you have, you know, you're limitless when you're writing music. It can be anything. And that was so much more attractive than let's sing this piece that's 600 years old again. You know what I mean?
Did it influence you though, as a musician?
I think in the discipline, I think that's the biggest part of it. It's like, okay, having a technique and having that sense of like writing something that can last years, you know what I mean? Because that's the best part of all of that music is, you know, pop music, and you know this, it's like pop hits come and go, and some, you know, end up living forever. But like things like an opera or things, you know, of that magnitude, you just don't see something that's going to live 500 years very often. So it's just, you know, it's incredible to see what art sticks with people, what art doesn't. And even something that's celebrated today, 500 years later, it may not be celebrated and something else will, you know? So it's interesting to see how that is, you know, so much about what dictates success or popularity, you know? So what would you say is like one of the biggest influences you had as a songwriter? Was there a certain artist that you were just like really influenced by, or was it a sound, or was it just being in New York and being around so many artists?
I think I was actually very influenced by a lot of visual art. Cool. Having come from that world, like just color and texture and expression there, I think that I was never somebody who was like, because I love this musician, I'm going to try to emulate what they do. Like later on in life as a musician, I've certainly tried to do that just to improve my craft. But early on, you know, I was influenced by my mom's vinyl collection. She was a hippie who went to Woodstock, and she had great taste in music.
Amazing. Wow. She went to Woodstock all 3 days she was there?
She did.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I always had that lore in my head and, you know, a good record collection to listen to. And then, you know, my great piano teacher from when I was young, who also turned me on to you know, some good jazz that I really liked, even though I never really became a jazz player. I think it still influenced some of my sound more for my like solo singer songwriter stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Led Zeppelin.
All the good stuff.
And, yeah. And Joni Mitchell later on. Yeah.
Coming from a visual background, do you do all of your album artwork, or do you kind of like want a separation between you being an artist in one genre and separating maybe what you were studying?
I think it definitely works its way in because the visual presentation matters so much to me, whether it's for live on a show or whether it's, you know, the album artwork. But because I don't do much visual artwork anymore explicitly, it's driven me to collaborate with really incredible people, which has been super fun, because that was one of the things, one of the reasons why I was so attracted to music over the visual arts is because of how collaborative it's been. It is.
Right.
And then I love that I've been able to actually fold in visual arts as a collaboration with the music and seek out some people who I think are just extremely talented, particularly within the world of Death by Piano, where the audiovisual it's really a marriage between the two. Those collaborations have been really, really fun and really meaningful to me. And it makes the, you know, the whole so much greater than the sum of its parts.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about that. So how did Death by Piano, it's like a visual art, it's kind of like art music, you know? How did that kind of come about, and what were like the kind of like collaborations, or what was the vision of the band?
Totally. So it all started, I had a band called Kaylin and the Sky Thieves. We were on Rope-A-Dope back in the day. And one of the guys, the bass player from that band, he and I sort of lived close to each other. So we often drove home from rehearsals together, listening to music, and then sort of started the idea of Death by Piano together as a side project, which just felt really different than the more like rock and roll songwriter stuff that we were doing in Kaylin and the Sky Thieves, to have this more dark wave electronic. And so it really started out as like a duo and a collaboration between between that person and myself. And that's where it was sort of birthed. The desire to have it integrate with visual artists was sort of like, I kind of steered that part of the ship. And then, yeah, eventually the bass player got busy sort of doing some other things, but Death by Piano was still something that I wanted to do, because I loved that my name wasn't in it at all.
Right,
it just felt like this really rich soil, this like fabulous canvas that I wanted to keep painting on.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? It's like sometimes you just want to hide behind the band name for it to be, because it's like, and I'm the same way. It's like I have my bands, and now it's like that is my brand, is like doing my bands. But there's always a part of me that's like, man, just like being. I have a songwriting team which gives me that, you know, it's called The Element. And it's like, I love hiding in that, because it's like you can do anything and nobody can judge you on, oh, you, this is a stretch for you to do this. It's like, nah, you know what? You don't know what this is because it's not defined yet. So yeah. I love that you had that. And you made me think of something really cool. You know, those drive backs from rehearsal with another musician. Those are some of the best listening sessions, I think, we all have. And it's like, I think my deepest relationships are when people go, hey, let me show you the song. And they show me something that is like something that moves them, especially when it's a musician and you're just listening and it's like, it's so good.
Yeah.
It becomes part of your collection. Like those are the best moments that we kind of take for granted sometimes because we're just in the hustle and bustle. But when you can stop and just have those moments with a band member or a friend in music and they show you something, and then it just like, it lights you up to want to have the idea to form a band or to sound, you know?
Yep. So
that's very cool. Let's play something from Death by Piano first. What do you want to play first?
Cool. So you have, what do you have there again? Disco Wrecking Ball and?
Let's why don't we play Disco Wrecking Ball? Let's do that one first.
Okay.
All right, here's Disco Wrecking Ball by Death by Piano.
The lights of your eyes are turning red. There's something growing the top of your head. Judas the narcissist had a giant view, drowning in the tiger's depths, a double-edged doom. And yet I want to be one who takes responsibility.
The inspiration behind that song.
Well, funny you should ask.
It is that, my job.
It is your job. That song is actually sort of about the breakup of the Death by Piano duo heading into Death by Piano 2.0.
Oh wow, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, those breakups can be.
It's like a marriage. Yeah. it's like one of the things that is, hardest. It's like it's almost easier to lose friends than band members, because it's like when you create something and start something and then it parts ways for whatever reasons, it's like, man, you're still living with some of those songs or that idea or that vision, even if they couldn't see it with you. So it's like you still carry a little bit of that, you know, connection with you in those moments, you know. So
100%, I feel that. 100%. Yeah. So it felt like this like righteous anger that I needed to get out. And it felt very sort of meta and appropriate to do it in this sort of second stage of what Death by Piano had become. Carrying it forward, you know, on my own. I mean, that song was very much a collaboration with the producer, Tom Marsh. He wrote much of it, and he's amazing. But it was really satisfying to write something that touched such a nerve for me, because it really allowed not only the like catharsis through the recording process of that, but it's allowed a moment during a live show to get just fucking wild.
Right.
And to really release that emotion, which I think is important dynamically when you're trying to represent, you know, the human experience, which is sort of what, at least what I'm trying to do when I perform the Death by Piano stuff, is I want to show the dynamic.
It's like controlled rage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I love it. And it's got like some, it's got two influences that I can hear that I love. It's like Imogen Heap meets like Bjork, which I love both those artists. As soon as I heard the sound, I was like, oh man, this is great. So was there like a vision as far as like the influence, or you just wanted it to be kind of like reckless and limitless as far as where you wanted to go musically?
Well, a lot of what happened, so I basically, one of the things that's different about Death by Piano than my solo stuff is that it usually starts with tracks and with somebody else's tracks. Occasionally I'm the one who starts them, but usually it's somebody else's. And I almost come in more as a top line person, and then I'll break things down and add synth and, you know, change the arrangement and stuff afterwards. But this collaboration with Tom Marsh, like I was put in touch with him as somebody who already really had sort of a Death by Piano sound, something that was super Portishead-y, Bjork-y. And so he showed me some tracks that he thought were already sort of in the world.
Okay.
And this was one of them. And so I sat with them for a while and started, you know, writing different ideas on top. And then once we got deep enough within a song, he allowed me to sort of, you know, break it apart even further.
I love that kind of like process of writing. I do a lot of top line stuff, and it's like, sometimes it's liberating when you're not the one creating the song or the music underneath it. And it's like, you can just tell the story. It's like, oh, this is great. I can just come in and something's already built, and I can direct where it can go. Cause it's, you know, it kind of is boundless as far as the direction, you know what I mean? So I love
boundless because of the boundaries that are already there. Like I'm doing something different than when I go to the piano and start a song in that way.
Right.
And so, yeah, it feels fun and it feels different. It's just a different way of collaborating and writing a piece.
And so when you perform it, do you perform it with tracks as well? Or do you do it all live? Or how does that process work?
Usually a combination. So this sort of Death by Piano 2.0 that has emerged more recently, I've done two big shows, which are on a tiny hiatus because I just birthed a tiny person.
Yeah, that's right. You're allowed. You're definitely allowed. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so the new band it's really, really cool, and it works really well with tracks because I didn't want to lose some of the fierceness that's there in the tracks. So this guy, Marlon Patton, he's an amazing drummer who does bass with his left foot on pedals on like organ pedals through Moog. So it sounds
crazy.
It sounds monstrous, and which it needs to for this music. Like that bass needs to be clean and big and deep. And also, because he's drumming and doing the bass at the same time, it almost, I mean, he's a beast and could do anything, but it almost necessitates more simple playing, which is really kind of appropriate for this music to both merge with the track in a certain way and provide a bed where the, you know, lyrical story has enough space to prosper.
Well, I have a load-in question for your drummer. Is he bringing a drum kit and an organ pedal like to in the oh my god, that guy is my hero. That's crazy. That's the one thing, like I played a bunch in New York, and you know, I've just lugged my acoustic and maybe some cables, and that alone, when you're in the subway or you know just going all over, I'm like, it's crazy. When I see a guy with an upright bass in the subway, I'm like, all right, he's got it way harder. When I see a drummer lugging stuff, I'm like, how the hell are you doing this? And then this guy's carrying some organ.
I know. No, it's a commitment. It's a really special sound that he's created.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have Johnny Butler, who's a sax player who I've collaborated a lot with both in my solo stuff and like various chapters of Death by Piano. So it's nice because so sometimes he's playing through effects often, but whether or not he is, you still have like, you know, he's pushing real air. you have some acoustic analog element of what's happening there. So it creates a lot of space around the tracks and it doesn't compete with what's there. I mean, obviously sometimes depending upon the gig, I'll pull out a lot of different elements from the tracks and give space for the bass and the drums and all of that. But I've really liked how it's emerged as something that complements and works with a lot of what's there in the tracks rather than just like either just using the tracks, which I think is generally pretty boring unless you really have quite a performance, or trying to have a band that, you know, directly replicates what's there. So instead there's this kind of interesting collaboration happening between elements of the tracks and then elements that are happening live. And it's been really fun to have that kind of push and pull, but that strong foundation of
love that.
We already produced and like.
Yeah. And are you ever playing outside of New York, or is it just, it's almost like it seems like it's so complicated you can only play in New York just because the players and the whole vibe, that's just going to be crazy to tour with that, you know, but is that a possibility that you'll hit Philly, you'll hit Boston and kind of take this once your baby is of age?
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, I would absolutely love that. We also have two dancers who are part of the Death by Piano live show now, one who's also sings backup. So I would dig it. I mean, I used to play in California a bunch. I used to play the sort of like, you know, Northeast Seaboard a bunch all before the pandemic, which also was when I had my first kid. So yeah, I would love to, but monetarily it's really hard to make work unless there's a certain amount of machinery behind you. And I'm not in the position to like just kind of leave my family for a while unless we can get a serious tour bus situation happening, you know?
What's cool is like, this is what I love about New York is like, there are artists like you doing things like that in New York. And then it's just like lives in New York. And that's why it becomes such a vibe in New York, because you're like a tastemaker city and you're seeing things that are like, oh, you're not going to see this anywhere else. You know, there's something also cool about it. Just like staying in New York for that reason, because that's what adds to the vibe of the city. It's like, I love when I see stuff like that in the city. I'm like, man, this is why I love New York, because it's just, it's forward moving in all aspects of art. And
it's a special place.
Yeah, it is a special place. Yeah. Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play next from Death by Piano?
What's the other track we have? The
Death by Piano track. Hold on. I think we have...
Is it Too Soon?
I have two... I have... Wait, hold on. I think you're right. Maybe...
Because I think I wanted to give you something that was sort of the other end of the spectrum. Something that...
Yeah, I have Disco Wrecking Ball and Too Soon. You're right. Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, so I think we should play Too Soon.
Too Soon. Here's Too Soon by Death by Piano.
Saying goodbye on some water's edge, with lapping waves and bowing leaves, I imagine that I wouldn't cry to see you turn from father. Was real and not an idiot, but couldn't feel. We still have futures left to heal. Don't vanish yet, it's not the deal. that I'm alone. Why don't you stop? You said you were taking a picture. I don't mind. I stayed behind, stood beside you, only for pizza. Tried my best to capture it all, including being beside you. Tears were soft, your hope was real. Just being beside you. Nothing left to leave to you soon. Still got futures left to give.
Awesome. Kaylin, my girl, you can sing. We talked about your piano playing, but let's talk about your vocals. When and where did you start singing, and how did that come about?
I don't ever remember not singing.
Love it.
I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, I can't really remember a time when I didn't.
Did you sing in like high school chorus or any of that stuff? Like,
Yeah, I did. I'm trying to think when I, it wasn't till, it's been it's sort of forever. Like,
that's awesome.
Think back, I'm like, I always sung at friends' weddings when I was little, at like, it's, I don't know.
Like, part of me, it's just what I do.
Part of me. I was born like a month and a half early, screaming. I came out of the womb like, I need to use this.
Well, it makes sense. My mom used to tell me that when we'd go to the grocery store as kids, there'd be, you know, on the conveyor belts, all the ladies would ask me to sing, and I would sing Coke commercials and stuff for candy. They would have candy like by the register, and they'd say, "Are you gonna come in and sing a song?" And I'd get up there and I'd start singing a song, and I'd still tell my mom, I'm like, "I'm still singing for candy, except for candy." Because it makes sense. It's like, you know, when you love what you do and you're born a singer, it makes sense. So I love that answer. You know, it makes sense totally.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's like, you talk so much about your piano playing, and you didn't mention how great your vocals are, and you're such a great singer. It's like,
thank you.
It's awesome. It's really, really beautiful. Tell me what your writing process is like when you're kind of going into the studio. Are you kind of, you know, doing vocals? Are you guys all working remotely? Are you guys working together in a studio? Like, you know, do you take on some of the producer role? Do you take more of the writer role? Do you kind of have a combination? Tell me what that collaboration's like.
Totally. So yeah, so I'll for now I'll speak to Death by Piano because it's a little different. So and I'll speak to the songs we just heard. So off the Vow EP, both Too Soon and Disco Wrecking Ball are two of the six songs off the Vow EP, which just came out.
Right.
And that sort of represents Death by Piano 2.0. And those songs were a collaboration with Tom Marsh. So, and I found him, I was turned on to him during the pandemic. So in part because of that, we started working remotely, kind of sending files back and forth. Unlike the stuff that I did with my former Death by Piano partner, a lot of Tom Marsh's ideas were like a little bit more fully hatched because he had these songs sort of, already very ready to go. So because of that, there was a little less co-production happening than there used to be on some older Death by Piano stuff. But like I said, once I knew what parts I really wanted to do, then depending upon the song, I'd say, can you give me those stems? I want to play with things. I want to take things out. I want to add things in. I want to add some synth. I want to, double the section. I want to add a bridge, whatever it might be. But we really mostly worked for a while just sending things back and forth in that way.
Isn't it crazy sometimes that you, like, in this day and age, you remotely work with somebody, and like working on music is an intimate thing. And Sometimes you don't even know, you haven't even like hung out with a person enough, but it's like you both have this like sense of musicianship, musicality that you're sharing via email. I just find it kind of fascinating that it's like,
it is fascinating. Yeah.
Kind of like dating somebody, you would never just date somebody like that, but with music, it makes sense because it's like you have to be at a level to create with somebody and collaborate. So it's just like, it becomes
100%.
It's crazy. Especially
when we're talking about, you know, like both having come from the time period of like driving back from rehearsal and bonding with somebody in a really like physically interpersonal present way. It's wild that there can actually be so much authenticity and so much intimacy that's created sending files back and forth. And, you know, if like, yeah, and you create, and the ways that you can create trust that way. And, you know, it was this slow unlocking process of like sending him something that he thought was good enough, and also being able to communicate with people well, right? To be like, you know, to try to ask nicely, like, I'd love to play with these things if you're comfortable with that. And you just have to feel each other out and have enough trust that like, okay, and if this idea doesn't work, that's cool. We can go.
Well, and the other thing too, it's like having like the coolest pen pal in the world. And when you, cause like, I love that. Like, I've been working on a record recently with Tony Levin, and every time I get an email from Tony, I'm like, oh my God, what's going to be? You know what I mean? And it's like, it's that level of like having this cool pen pal that sends you stuff. And like that moment that you're about to, you know, download the file and see what it looks like or sounds like, that's like the greatest feeling, because you get this you get this peek into something the world hasn't even, you know, can't even imagine what they're going to hear. And you hear it first and see it realized. I think there's nothing greater than those moments sometimes. It's like, and it's crazy that it all happens via email. It's like, oh yeah, wait till they get it, and you just don't know what the reaction is until.
Totally. And it's almost as fun being the one to receive it as it is the one being to send it off too. Yes. And like, I, you know, I'll know when I have an idea that I think like, okay, that was good. I dug that. I really want to see what they think. Oh, did they dig it too? And like, I'm checking, did they listen yet?
That's the best feeling. It's like, and you're like, please don't kill this because it's so good. And when you just believe in it and then they receive it like that too, it's like, oh yeah, it's on. You know what I mean? And but it's crazy because it's like, that is a level of communication and intimacy and just being personal and vulnerable, but yet it's not in person. It's all via email. So it's like, I find it like almost like a contradiction because of that, you know?
No, it is. It's a wild, artifact of this digital age. But
I love seeing that you're creating in this way, because that is the way now. It's like, it's just what happens, you know?
It's really become like, you know, a sort of a hybrid of sorts between working in that way with people. So even from like my solo stuff versus working like from the, you know, a band situation, we're all working together. Cause even now with a lot of my solo stuff, like I'll perform a demo version that might just be vocals and piano, or maybe I'd like work up a little bit of loose production on it and then send it off. And some of those sessions are together in person, which can be great when that can happen.
Right.
Although sometimes it's a little scary at first.
Right. Like,
especially getting used to being able to do things in a cocoon and then feel really exposed. But then you also build a certain amount of intimacy and trust, and then things come up collaboratively in the moment together when you're in the same room that are...
Nothing beats that for me. It's like when you're in the same room with somebody, it's like, and you can see reactions and you
can... Happy accidents can really grow.
Yeah.
And
that's the best. That never will be replaced, but it can in other contexts. Do you want to play something from your solo project?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what's the name of this? Is it Silence Like Sirens, or is that...
So this is Silence Like Sirens, and this is the title track from my last solo EP. And this song was produced with Eric Zeiler, who's also a New York based producer, who I've worked with for a whole bunch of my solo stuff. He's really cool. He's had a whole bunch of bands. He has like a band, Me Not You. He had Little Daylight, which did pretty well back in the day. Now he's part of this sort of production duo called Big Sob. So he's great. And we've obviously become friends through the process as well. And I remember this song, when I first sent it to him and he sent me something back, at first I really was not digging the direction. And we really had to, and I, you know, you have to be careful about the way that you say that, because you don't want to, but also it's then how somebody receives something without being defensive, you know? So he was like able to understand the elements that I really liked and the elements that I didn't, and then got it to a place that was just so wonderful to me. Yeah. So that's this is Silence Like Sirens.
All right. Here's Silence Like Sirens by Kaylin.
Come back to bed, I see.
So beautiful. Wow. You know, I got to give you a huge compliment and also a question too. So first of all, you write really beautiful music. And my question is, you are such a bubbly personality, yet you write real brooding, moody songs. Where does that come from? Because when I've met you, you're bubbly, you're smiling. And then when you write like this really brooding, moody, kind of like heart on the sleeve type of ethereal music.
That's a good question. My mom always talks about that too. I think some of it comes from like some of, I don't completely know, to be honest with you.
But
I'm somebody who I want to bring out the best in people. I see the best in people. So I think that that's like where some of the bubbliness comes from. And I think I like to try to keep things positive a lot of the time. I think when I was young, I was a bit too much of a people pleaser. I don't think the warmth is that now, but I think that because of that, it drove me to go to my music, to be in an emotional world that was not in that place, that would just make other people feel good or unthreatened.
Right.
And so I think it was a bit of like the rest of my inner world. It was the place where it could come out. It was a vehicle for the other emotions that I sort of didn't want to tax people with, or didn't want to, or myself didn't even know how to bring up through like regular conversation and way of being.
That's why we love art. But where can people find your art if they're looking for you online? Where can people find you?
Well, I think the easiest is probably my website. So kaylinmusic.com is where all of my solo music lives. And I just finished, just before having my baby, my most recent baby, I just finished like 14 songs of solo piano and voice.
Wow.
Like really stripped down stuff. Some have, there are a couple with really light production. There are a few with saxophone, but it was like grand piano in a gorgeous studio and me. And I guess my baby in the womb. and I'm very excited. That's going to come out on Heiferhead Records probably early next year.
Awesome. You keep it busy with all the motherhood. I love it.
Yes, always. And then Death by Piano can be found at deathbypianonyc.com.
Well, I definitely would love to catch a show next time I'm in New York. You have to let me know if you're performing. And we definitely have to write some music too at some point.
That would be really fun.
Kaylin, you are a force to be reckoned with. We're so excited. We finally got to have you on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thank you so much.
You and I have been talking about this for a while. But so
I know.
You know what? We made it happen. And you know what? We're going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months with more.
I love it.
So we just want to keep this story going. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Do you remember how we first met?
Yeah, we met. I want to say we met at a music conference.
Yeah, I think so.
ASCAP Expo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I like those things for, to actually meet songwriters like yourself. So
totally.
That's how it works.
Thank you so much for having me and for the great questions. And I've been listening to your most recent album and enjoying it too.
Oh, you're awesome. Well, we'll have to collaborate, make some music. But in the meantime, I get to enjoy all this amazing music. I'm Sam, myself, and Kaylin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Check out Kaylin's music, Death by Piano, and kaylinmusic.com. We'll see you when we can, and take care and lots of love. And Kaylin, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Wonderful.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.